Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 397, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I am your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Chris Jones of NashvilleComputer.us. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. Chris is one of those people that actually contacted me and said he wanted to be on the show. So we made a time and we're able to put our times together and get him on a show. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited anytime obviously he's not a new tech, but anytime I can get a tech that's never been on a show before, it's very exciting for me because I love to hear everybody's stories.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. All right, I'll tell you what, let's start off with this. Why don't you tell a little bit about yourself and basically how you got started in computer repair?
Actually, I got started back in 1995. I actually was in the cable TV business for many, many years, and I was a director of information technology for what now is Comcast for the Middle Tennessee region. And I basically broke off and started my business in 95 part-time, and 1996 I went full-time. So I've been doing it almost 20 years. Couple different companies I've actually sold out twice and started back, so, you know.
Wow. Okay. So you've actually sold your companies and started over again twice?
I actually have. I actually have. Wow. I actually sold out the first time to a big client that I had, a big mortgage company that's a national mortgage company. My staff and myself built their infrastructure, and they approached me and asked if we would want to join them, and I reluctantly agreed and actually went to work for them. And then about 30 days afterwards, after sitting in an office, I just couldn't take it. So I actually broke off and took two of my guys back with me and left like six of them there and started back over again. So.
Wow. That's interesting. So you still had the bug in you, still wanted to, you wanted the entrepreneur side, not so much the, I'm going to sit behind the desk and kind of manage things.
Exactly. And I really enjoy dealing with people and we actually do a lot of different things, cabling, fiber, all that type stuff. And I got more into the business side of it and I just didn't enjoy it. So,
okay. No, that makes a lot of sense.
That's why.
Okay, cool. No, I think one of the things with this business is, it's one of those things where I really think that you have to enjoy talking to people, because if you don't, it's one of those things that it's like, I don't know, it wouldn't be any fun. And I think if it wasn't fun, we want to make money, but it's like, wow, I still got to have that interaction with the people. And it's hard to find techs that can do actually both good tech work and, be able to talk to people.
Well, you have hit the nail on the head with that, because really a really good, smart, nerdy tech guy is not a really good, personable guy for your clients. And to find that mix is really a hard thing. That's actually something that I'm struggling with a guy right now that I've got, and he knows it, but it's tough, and it's tough for business owners. It's tough to have folks treat people like you want them to be treated. And a really good tech guy has a really, really hard time relating with people. He's not relating to a machine. He's got to physically talk to people, and that's where it gets really tough.
I think about that even in my own business sometimes when I get to that point where I need to hire people and I'm like, there's people that are great technicians but you almost have to hide them in a closet.
Oh man, that is so true. And for business owners, that I actually have guys with me for a long time before I let them out on their own to learn and there's so much they have to learn to relate to. But you have to be able to read people.
Right.
And I'm one of those guys, I can interview somebody for 30 seconds and know if they're going to make it or not. And, I've hired so many people within a minute. I mean, I know that sounds really weird, but a computer guy is a computer guy, and you can tell if they're really sharp or not. And,
right.
And you have to kind of work with them on the personality traits and everything else. So.
Yeah, that is a tough thing. And I guess as you're separating your business out, sometimes you look at things and you go, okay, can I hire this guy as an excellent tech? Can he get things done? But I got to keep him basically at the shop or, not interacting with people, and then maybe hire somebody else that can go out there and interact with the people. And I think you even get this in the, from what I've heard from different friends in the corporate IT world, you get these guys that are great, great technicians, but they're not real good with their people skills. And they're, a lot of times, if they've got to go out to a desk or something like that, it's like, there's just no personality.
Yeah, Jeff, that is so true. I've actually got a younger guy now that works for me that it's kind of funny because here about 2 weeks ago, my client told me that basically, I've had this client for a long time, and they would basically deal with me or a couple of my other guys. And, it's a hard thing to explain to a guy. It's a hard thing to train somebody, it's a really, really that people I have found, companies that I go in and take over clients, that is the biggest negative attribute, that I find. Folks just can't handle the communication and the,
right.
Everything that goes along with it. So
these are all good points. Definitely something for technicians to think about as they're looking to hire people. I don't think you're going to ever hire somebody exactly like you, which is what we all would want. I know it's what I would want in my own business, but you've got to, like you said, you go through that interview process and you get somebody that's able to talk to people and basically able to solve problems.
Right.
And willing to learn. I think willing to learn is a big one too, that people really have to have that willingness to learn. And listen, you might have been doing this for 20 years, but I like doing it this way, and this is how my business runs, and this is how we're going to do it now. And it's harder. I've heard different stories of where it's harder to take somebody that's been in the business for a long time and kind of change their ways, but then it's hard to bring the new guy up and kind of teach him the ways when he has no experience whatsoever. So you're kind of caught in the middle with trying to figure out which is a better option at this point,
Yeah. Yeah, it is tough because sometimes, you can't teach the old dog new tricks, kind of comes into play. And younger guys nowadays, it's tough because they just don't, you get so many of them that you hire, and they're decent computer guys, but they didn't grow up with the DOS world. And, back in 81, I actually remember opening the box to a Commodore, starting there. And, guys nowadays just, start with a brand new machine, and they don't have all that experience. And, it's tough. And sometimes they just don't understand that, and it's tough.
Yeah. I was going to say, in my household, with my kids and stuff, what I've made them do is when they get to a certain age, I make them all build their own computer.
Yeah.
And, because it kind of teaches them, what's what, kind of what does what. And I said, I'm not necessarily, I don't want you guys to, if you're not interested in this, that's fine. I don't want you to know everything about everything, but I want you to have enough knowledge that you're not going to get taken advantage of if you do need things worked on or whatever. So you'll have a better idea if somebody's telling you, hey, this is wrong. And you go, no, that's not the problem. But it teaches them. And I think a lot of times, they're appreciative, of that because they're able to learn something new that not everybody does. And, when they have a problem, it's not dad just going in to fix it. It's like, okay, what happened? Right. how are we going to look at this problem? And, I was just having a conversation with my son, and this is something simple. He's nine, and we were talking about Minecraft, and he goes, so what can make your computer run smoother? And I said, okay, explain to me what's going on, you know, because they've got pretty robust machines. Mm-hmm. And they're like, he's like, well, he goes, you know, I want to make it, I'm having glitchy problems with Minecraft. I said, okay, how many mods do you have installed? Not that many, about 22. And I'm like going, okay. He goes, I said, you probably have a mod that's you know, not working correctly with your Minecraft. I said, you gotta find out which one it is and take it out. And he asked me, he goes, well, what's the best way to do that? He goes, how do I do that? And so I just explained to him. I didn't get up or anything. I just said, here's what I would do if I was in that situation. I would take all your mods out. And then what I would do is I would take the mods and one by one, put them back in and see if you have any problems. Mm-hmm. So I'm teaching him troubleshooting, which to me is the number one thing in this business. You need to learn how to troubleshoot. Whether you know everything or not, doesn't really matter. And so he goes, Dad, that's a really good idea. He goes, I'm going to do that. I said, great. And that's what he did and went and figured out which mod was causing the problems. So, you know, and these are things that, you know, if you can teach a 9-year-old that, you should be able to teach a 20-something-year-old how to deal with people and how to, you know, yeah, how to basically troubleshoot. But it all depends on the person, too, I guess.
Yeah, it's really tough to teach the aspect of kids nowadays are, well, I shouldn't say kids, but, you know, newcomers into the business. They will just tear stuff up and not ask questions. And, you know, I had a situation a couple of weeks ago where we had I've got a client that's got big VMware server, you know, with a bunch of VMs on it and running QuickBooks on multiple servers and that type of stuff. And, you know, they kind of do it and ask questions later. And I'm like, dude,
right,
you know, ask questions first. I mean, there's no question that's too stupid to ask.
Exactly.
You know, ask the questions. And if I can stress that to new guys getting into the business, you know, I mean, I ask my clients more questions, you know, about how things should be, you know, how they want them. And it's a tough thing to, because kids are just so used to just, if it doesn't work, tear it apart, reload it. You know, they're not right, used to kind of getting into it and figuring out exactly why it's not running right. You know, is the memory bad? Is, you know, and that's the troubleshooting, you know, used to be kind of, you know, changing stuff out and trying to fix it. Now it's kind of, it's just replacing machines and that's where it's tough. So,
yeah, it's, you know, trying to teach that process of elimination, basically, you know, hey, what's not working? Let's figure this out. And we're going to remove this and we're going to put that back in. And it's one of those things that's just part of the troubleshooting. And even as a technician for myself, sometimes I will sit there and go, I'll be working on a problem. And I'm, you know, I'm thinking it's one thing. It might be a, you know, a machine needs a tune up. And then it dawns on me about halfway through this tune up is I'm still having problems that, oh, I probably should have checked the hard drive to see if it had problems.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like one of those things. Here's one of the tips that I know about, and yet I still don't do it every time. You know, I'll run a program and I'll run like Crystal Disk Info, which gives you basic information. It's not anything heavy. It might call it clean and there could still be a problem.
Right.
But, you know, on these new machines nowadays, you know, your Dells, HPs and stuff like that, you've got your diagnostics, you know, in your preboot system.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get in the preboot, you know, hit your F8, go in there, hit the diagnostic tool, or even some of these laptops have a button that you can just press instead of pressing a power button, and it'll get you right into that screen. Do a full diagnostic on the system.
Right.
Check and make sure that everything's right before you start going in and just, you know, wasting a bunch of time. And that's what I find myself doing sometimes. I'm wasting a bunch of time when I should have had a process that could do this, you know, that much better. And so what I'm doing is I'm going through these different things is I'm trying to document a process that I can pass on to somebody that's in the business and somebody that's just learning. And you know, quite frankly, between you and me, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but pretty much anybody under 30 is a kid to me.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and my guy, you know, I say the same thing to my guys, and I call them kids, you know, because, and none, nothing against them, but that's, it's a, this is a tough business. This is a doggy dog business.
Yeah.
And one major screw up and you're done. I mean, you're there. I mean, I've got clients from, you know, all over the country and there's no saying I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, when you blow servers up or, you know, lose data or, you know, the backup didn't run or the virus software expired or, you know, this or that, you have got to have your P's and Q's together and you've got to be organized.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I'm one of those guys that I work literally from 5 a.m. till 2 a.m. I mean, I get minimal sleep and I just, you know, my love is computers and that's pretty much what I do all the time. And, you know, you have to listen to podcasts, you have to read books, you have to, you know, experiment, you have to run all different types of stuff. And that's kind of where I learn everything. And it's tough. So.
Oh yeah. And you know, it's a great business to learn in. And you know, again, it just comes back to whether you're young or not, or you're brand new in the business. It's one of those things, as long as you're teachable, that's the key thing. As long as you're willing to listen to somebody else that's gone through, you know, some of the things working on these machines so that you don't have to go through some of the same heartaches that we've gone through.
Right.
Just listen. And even though you might not understand the process or it might not make sense to you, and I'm always willing to listen to, especially with this show, I'm always willing to listen to people that are young in the business because sometimes, man, they've come up with a great way to do something that I think about and I go, oh, you know, I never thought about that because I'm kind of ingrained in the ways I do things. So I'm always trying to not reinvent myself, but reinvent the process to see if I can make it better than what it was.
Right. Yeah, this is a business that you have to learn every day.
Yeah,
I mean, I learn every day new things. You know, I'm a very open minded individual. I listen to my guys, and you know, sometimes they've got a better way of doing things.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I've got a better way of doing things. So, you know, we're kind of the jack of all trades in this business. So, you know, we have to know everything from the patch panel, you know, how that cable is wired all the way down to, you know, the desktop and right. It's tough sometimes. So, yeah.
No, that's, you know, there's even stuff with, you know, I remember looking at patch panels in some of the businesses I used to work in. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, fortunately we had a company that kind of took care of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well,
if you don't know it, at least you can, you know, hire somebody that's, you know, that you trust and that you can use, you know, so that they can kind of work in tandem with what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, see, we have done cabling. I've done cabling for 30 years. So, I mean, that kind of ages me there, I did the old 10 base 2, you know, the old coax, and then we got into, you know, Cat 5, Cat 5E, Cat 6. So we take on those big jobs and that for the up and coming computer guy is a great revenue source. You know, because when I'm a little bit slow in computer work, you know, we usually have a lot of cabling work and, you know, vice versa. So that's kind of how I truly believe that's how we've survived. I've survived, you know, for this many years, is because of our experience in the whole realm of the business. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, no, that's, I think, yeah, another thing is, like you've said, diversification of what you do and, you know, find something that, you know, you have a lot of talent in and do that. And then so you can kind of work things from both sides. You know, you've got your computer side, you've got your cabling side, and that makes perfect sense. I think a lot of times we get, you know, I definitely believe you want to find your niche, whatever you're good at. But I think you have to do other things that maybe you're not as good at, but you know, where you're able to, like you said, make money in the off times, because maybe, you know, you don't have a lot of computers coming in, but you're able to take care of a, you know, a server or business or whatever. So,
And that's what I try to explain to my new guys, is that when you're in fixing one problem, and it's not something that we do to oversell or, you know, whatever, but you have got to look for other possible work and other available work and other possible issues that are going to bite you in the butt down the road. Right. So, you know, that's the whole, you know, and cabling is one of those things that, believe it or not, it's paying lower now than it did 10 years ago. But, you know, especially around here, you know, we used to do drops for, you know, $125, you know, a piece. Now we're down to 80, you know, 70 to 80 a piece for Cat 5E. So,
wow.
You know, and, but it's a good revenue source.
Sure. Absolutely. No, that sounds good. Well, it sounds like, yeah, there's a lot in this business that you can do. What types of stuff have you been working on lately that, you know, it's kind of interesting to you or, you know, might help somebody out there?
We have been doing a large amount of migrations from internal Exchange servers, from Intermedia, which is a hosted Exchange, cloud Exchange, over to Google Apps, over to 365.
Okay.
We've done a number of those, and I've got three in the pipeline right now. So, you know, that's moving all data, moving all email, moving everything from inside to outside. And, you know, we're doing a number of migrations over to Ubuntu. I've got a client that's using 14.04 on desktops now because it you know, it runs so well. And you know, we were actually one of the first companies, believe it or not, in Nashville back in the early 90s to introduce Red Hat, to introduce, you know, servers. And I've actually got some servers that are still running are from back in the early, late 90s, early 2000s. So, you know, we still do Linux work, but, okay. and just migrations from old servers, over to newer servers, you know, we haven't done a whole lot of Windows 8 migration. We've done a little bit, but folks are staying on Windows 7 a lot. You know, we're just not doing a whole lot of that right now. So, and I really don't see a whole lot of it, you know, coming up. You know, folks are staying that way.
Yeah, Windows 7, as long as it's supported, I'm sure that's probably the way they're going to go for right now. It's what they're used to, especially in the corporate environment. But going back to your migrations of, you know, Office 365, Google Apps, and stuff like that, how did you learn how to do that type of stuff?
I mean, just by doing it over the years.
Okay.
There's a number of tools to move all the data from accounts, from Exchange accounts or Exchange servers over to Google Apps. And Google Apps is a great tool. And so many guys, and especially here in Nashville, I debate on a regular basis. They love to sell servers. I love to sell cloud services because we make more money on labor, and they seem to sell, you know, love to sell hardware. I don't like hardware. I don't like to sell it. Don't like to buy it. Don't like to warranty it. Don't like anything about it. And anything that I can do to move my clients in a cloud environment to where we bill more labor and you know, it's easier labor to bill too, because when servers are always needing updates and crashing, and, you know, clients seem to get extremely just upset.
And, right.
And when I go to a client and say, look, I want you to get rid of your servers, I want you to move more to the cloud, they're like, well, it's going to take less of your time. And I'm like, well, if that's what it takes to provide a better service to a customer, I will push that way. And I mean, I go against, and I'm not going to name names, but I go against two of the big boys here in Nashville all the time and take clients from them. And they're selling $70,000 servers and I'm selling cloud services. So, you know, it's a crazy business in that regard. So, and I was actually listening to your podcast, a couple days ago about rates and that type thing. And I've got some really crazy opinions on that, but we charge the same rate that I have had since 1999. So,
wow.
So we charge the same rate. And, I truly believe in the Walmart theory of business for labor, which is sell more and lower profit. You're going to stay busy, and we stay busy. See, a lot of these guys raise their rates up to, you know, 125, 130. They're sitting at the house. We're not sitting at the house.
Gotcha.
And that's, I agreed with a couple of your guys, but I disagreed with a couple of them, you know, and that to me is an important factor. And we don't lowball, but we do a lot of different things with rates. So I've got contracts. I mean, I've got some clients that I've had since 95 that, I charge fairly close to the same rate. And I know that sounds crazy, but you know, we're billing fairly well with those guys. So,
no, that's good. I mean, I think whatever works for you. Now, are you doing, you're probably doing hourly rates though, right?
No, we actually do a lot of different things.
Okay.
I do contracts. I've got a couple large contracts that I do with clients. That mortgage company that actually bought me out back in the early 2000s, that was a very large monthly contract. But the rate was down far enough to where, it staffed them perfectly. So, that's something that people really have to take into, consideration on rates. And you know, I go up against guys every day that are billing 125 for doing, you know, desktop work and they're sitting at the house. So,
right.
You know, or they've got guys sitting in the office studying for CNE or, you know, studying for Cisco stuff, you know, and not out working. And that's where it's one of those things that you really have to consider what you're doing with rates.
Yeah.
So
it's one of those things that you can't, unless you try it and do something with your rates, you really can't, it's something hard to figure out.
It is. And you really have to listen to your customers. You can't just wholesale raise your rate on everybody. I've got a client I've had, like I was telling you, since 95 or 96. It was one of my first clients. I just don't raise his rate. And I know that sounds ridiculous and guys are going to think I'm retarded, but there again, I truly believe that Walmart sells a lot more because they have low prices and they're making a smaller margin on a lot more things, which they've got larger returns. And that's my whole theory. You know, you stay busy and sell a lot more volume, and that's where your money's at, is volume. It's not the onesie twosie.
Right.
So,
well, I think what it comes down to is you know, a lot of us, when you're looking at certain things that you're doing and the amount of time that it's actually taking you to do it, you know, whether from phone calls to pick up delivery, times, you know, spent on the bench, stuff like that, or even remoting in time there. I think a lot of times we undercut ourselves a lot, and it's tough because when you look at residential, you know, residential computer compared to a business, it's a way different thing. And, you know, a lot of people that are doing, you know, a lot of residential are, you know, basically, you don't have as many residential, I think, until you get some of the businesses and stuff like that, because, you know, residentials will come and see you. And a lot of times they are looking for price. I'm more about the, you know, building the relationship with the customer, and hopefully they'll be coming back to me. And I'll tell you the reason I raised my rates is because every time I would say, I would give my customer, not every time, but most times when I would give the customer a bill, they would go, "That's it." And at that point I knew I was charging too little.
Right.
And quite honestly, for what I was charging them, I would not have kept doing what I'm doing. There's just no way.
Right.
You know, between, 15%, self-employment tax, all your advertising and all these different things that you have to pay for. It's like, there's a lot of cost involved. So again, it's one of those things you really have to measure out. And yeah, do I want to charge a real large amount? No. You know, here's the bad thing though. You go to a Staples or a Best Buy and, you know, hey, oh, you want that screen replaced? It'd be $450.
Right.
And people pay that all day long.
Yeah.
And you just go, what in the world? You're like going, and you know, a lot of times you go, I'll change that same screen for $149. And they're like, that's just too expensive. Yeah. And it's like, you go, really? That's too expensive. Okay. I'll just go buy a new computer, you know? And a lot of people think that they'll buy a, you know, I can just get a new computer for $300. Well, that's true. You can get a new crappy computer for $300. Absolutely. But you're going to have problems with it. And I try to explain to people all the time. They're like, they'll bring me these laptops and they're, you know, they got cracks all over it. And, basically they're falling apart and they go, well, you know, what type of laptop should I get? And I'm like, well, listen, I said, if you're going to buy a $300 laptop and you surf the internet, check your email and stuff like that, and you're not going to move it around a lot, these are fine. The problem is you're putting it in a backpack. You're taking it with you everywhere. And I said, if you want to spend more money, you're going to get a lot of times a better built machine that's going to last you longer. So it just depends on what you want. Some people will buy the $300 computer. Some people will buy a $750 computer.
Right.
You know, and it all depends on the need of the customer. But I think one of the things that we do as techs is we try to help the customer get the best bang for their buck, whatever it is, whatever they're doing, you know, and we don't want to take advantage of them or anything like that. We just want to, hey, here's what I recommend. And, you know, some will go, that sounds good. Others will go, it seems a little expensive. Now I'm going to do something else. So,
right. Yeah. It's rates are a tough thing. And God, I could go on for hours on rates because I've got guys that call me and I consult with all the time and to keep a client is a tough thing. And rates are so pivotal, to them because they see, say the people that are cleaning their office, they've not raised their rates in 10 years on them and then they're like, well, why are you raising your rate? And that's where it gets tough. And now support is so remote. I mean, I spend, a couple days just doing remote support. And I mean, I use TeamViewer, I use GoToAssist, I use all those. And stuff I think is easier now than it used to be, back in the late 90s, when a lot of these guys didn't know what, driving out to every client was like to work on something and driving back out there the next day. So, that's where it's a lot different. And a lot of the guys come in now and want to charge $125, and it's, or whatever. And that's where they really have to consider how much remote work they're going to do, and how they're going to explain to the customer when they don't see them, touch them and feel them, how can you charge X amount of dollars?
Right.
I make it a point to kind of rattle all my customers, go in, talk to them, sit down with them, usually on a regular basis. So, one way or another, and I send out newsletters. My wife actually has a blog service, NashvilleBlogService.us, and she writes blogs for people here in Nashville. But I keep blogs on my site religiously, weekly.
That's good.
And that I mean, I get lots and lots of national contract calls because of that. And guys don't understand, you know, that those simple facts, you know, of doing business. So,
right. Well, it's, you know, again, it's one of the things we talked on Podnuts today was we basically talked about customer service and how to take care of your customer. And you know, it's little things like, you know, I talked about how I send thank you cards out, you know, just with postcards. And everybody's like, well, isn't a stamp like, you know, 50 cents? And I think for a postcard, it's like 33 or something like that. I said, if you're billing enough, I said, it's not that big a deal. And I said, how many companies actually do that?
None.
You know,
it's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm, you know, again, I'm looking for a certain type of customer in my business, and, you know, one that I can have a long-term relationship with. And, you know, you just got to feel it out and see where you're at. I really don't like going out on site, but I know eventually that's absolutely where I'm going to end up. Right. I'm going to have to go out on site for certain things. And hopefully, like you said, once things are set up and in place, there's a lot of remote support. So you can get things done quicker. And, you know, maybe, you know, instead of billing that hour, you know, you might build, you know, 15 minutes of whatever your rate is, or a half hour. You know, so that's going to save you a lot of time. Here's one of the ways I look at it. And this is strictly from a residential standpoint. I can remote in your computer. You got a virus. If, as long as I can get in there and we take care of everything, I can do a virus removal and cleanup, and I'll do it for a flat rate. And then it'll be done within a couple hours. Or you can spend less. You can bring it to me. You can get in your car, drive out, give me the computer, and yeah, 2 or 3 days later, you have it back. And it just depends on the customer. What, you know, so to me, when you're given a convenience service, that's why I tend to charge a little bit more on, you know, like a virus removal tune-up remotely, because it can be done quickly and the people can be on their way, versus you bring it to me, because, you know, I have a full-time job, so it's not getting done, you know, anytime quick.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
So again, it's just one of those things you got to measure and kind of find what your area is. You know, I mean, I did a reinstall for a guy, and because he had basically deleted some Windows files, and he's not sure which ones he did. So I just got to a point where I'm like, this thing is so messed up. I was able to get his data back, and I basically reinstalled the operating system, did all the updates, got him back to where he was going. And he comes and picks it up. And because I'd done a virus removal for $49, you know, 5 months earlier, this was a newer machine. And, you know, I only charged him $89. Mm-hmm. And he was like, he looked at me, he's like, $89? I said, actually, that's a discount. I said, normally for a reinstallation in data transfer, I charge $125. So,
yeah.
I said, I gave you a discount because there was some miscommunication. I had your computer a little bit longer than what we thought. And that, you know, partially that was my fault for, you know, trying to fix the problem. And that's why I did that. So, you know, it's one of those things. But hey, before we continue on, I want to take a second and talk about one of the sponsors for the show. And that is a D72. D72 is the ultimate PC's technician's repair tool, designed to automate your daily workload, eliminate errors, and dramatically increase your efficiency, and ultimately your bottom line. D72 provides automation for system information gathering and custom reporting, virus and malware removal, Windows repair and comprehensive maintenance, basic tweaking and app installations, data backup, keeping all of your favorite tools updated, keeping your configurations and definitions synced in the cloud, and integration with your PSA CRM ticket tracking software. And D72 version 3 is new, simple, and descriptive interface for viewing and reacting to system alerts, and also for running internal functions. Build custom HTML reports with pre-configured templates. Customize your apps or system alerts, which are all automatically logged as you work within D72. Reorder all D72 functions, mixing and matching them with custom apps in your predefined auto mode routines, and more. D72, automate, relax, get paid. You guys want to check that out over at foolishit.com. The creator is Nick Shaw, and he has an awesome program that you can basically automate your business. And when you're trying to do a virus removal cleanup, it's an excellent tool that works really good. And he's always updating it and making it a lot better. So go check that out now at foolishit.com. All right. So we talked about some of the things you've kind of been working on. What are some of your favorite tools and software or hardware that you use in your business probably on a regular consistent basis?
We do a lot of virus removal, a lot of malware removal. We have kind of standardized on Avast. I've tried everything. I've tried McAfee, Norton, every Kaspersky, everything out there possible. And we have standardized on Avast. Actually, I use the Avast server product. I use for clients. I actually work with a reseller out of Memphis, and we have pretty much went over the past 3 or 4 years 100% Avast. I use Malwarebytes pretty much on every machine that we work on. Malware is just such a pain, and you know, I actually heard Leo Laporte today. I was listening to his Sunday or his Saturday broadcast, and he said that Windows 8 needs nothing. It comes standard with the Microsoft products, but I've actually had some Windows 8 machines that were infected, that's kind of scary for a guy of that stature to be saying that. And I've seen all types of stuff on Windows 8 machines. So
here's my take on that, because that's all I actually use on my machine is Windows Defender.
Do you?
And I use a lot of people kill me for this. I use Microsoft Security Essentials on my bench machine. And so backing up all the data and different things that I do, obviously there's infections on hard drives and stuff all the time. So I did a test one day and I said, well, you know what? I said, I've had every antivirus program on all these different computers and every one of them were infected. I've never gotten one that, you know, if it was whatever it was running, if it was running something good, you know, a paid for version, and it was updated and all that kind of stuff, they were still infected.
Right.
And so I did a test one day. I downloaded ESET's NOD32 and I took off my bench computer. I didn't do anything. I didn't do any cleanup on it or anything like that. I put NOD32 on there and took my Microsoft Security Essentials off, and I ran a full scan over everything, all the client's data and everything. And it came back with nothing. And they've got a pretty high rate of, catching infections and stuff like that. And my point to that is I've had Microsoft Security Essentials catch all kinds of things when I plug a drive in. I've never had a problem. So, I do have Malwarebytes running on there, and even I think I have a paid version of Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah.
Those will catch some things, but every time there's been something that's like dangerous, Microsoft Security Essentials has found it. So I don't know. I'm not sure why that is. I can't exactly explain it. I just think that a lot of times if a person is going to click on a link in an email or on a link on a website, there's not a whole lot of they can do, because even if the UAC comes up and says, hey, are you sure you want to do this? What does everybody do? Click yes.
Yeah.
In a worst case one, if you do get a drive-by and you get a pop-up, the thing that everybody does, what do? They click it, and they might be smart enough to go, oh, that's not really what it is. That's fake. And they'll click the little red X or the little X up in the right-hand corner of the window, and it launches a program. By that time, they're host.
So, right.
But I would be very interested to hear, because I've always heard good things about Avast too.
It's a good program. We actually really like it. And I think the big plus for Avast is the email scanning. I think it does a little bit more port protection as far as some of the malware and that type thing. And I see your point about Microsoft. I've seen that same result. And for people that aren't using anything, I mean, I think it does do a pretty good job. But I think for servers and you know, folks that are running Outlook and running Thunderbird. I mean, I'm pushing all my clients to Thunderbird. I really like Thunderbird.
Okay.
And I run that on all my Linux machines. You know, I think they've got a lot of apps that you can add in for scanning and spam and all that type of stuff. So, but no, that's a big debate on virus and malware. Nobody makes a tool for everything. That's right. The hard thing.
Exactly. And,
you know, that's a really, really tough thing to explain to clients. Well, why does this guy do it this way and this guy does it this way?
It's so, a lot of it's based on opinion. And
yeah.
You know, one of the things that I think that, you know, I'll also say this. Okay, so on my routers, I use OpenDNS.
Right.
And it's you know, some of the things that I have checked off where it actually blocks is, you know, it won't go to any proxy type settings. So it won't basically traverse around something. So even if there is an infection or something like that, it can't actually get out to the internet. And so I think that's part of why I've been so fortunate here over the past, you know, I tell everybody I haven't been infected on my personal machine since probably 2002 or 2003.
Right.
And, you know, I don't really, I mean, I don't run a bunch of scans and stuff all the time. I mean, I used to years ago, you know, Windows 98 days and stuff like that anymore. You know, stuff just seems to work. But again, your average client is going to do bad. I mean, that's the way I look at it. They're going to mess something up, which in some respects is good for us because it keeps, you know, keeps us in business. Now I do sell managed service, and I let everybody know because people ask me all the time, well, how can I stop this from happening?
Right.
I said, I can give you a couple free tools that you can update and run and do some different things and try to keep it cleaner for a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. I said, but the reality is unless you have something monitoring that system every day and from different points, you know, whether it's updating Java, updating Flash, you know, you making sure you're updated on your antivirus, make sure there's nothing being changed in the system, making sure that your Windows updates are done all automatically, because what ends up happening on most of my clients' machines is I get the computer, I open it up, I look at it, and I go, okay, there's the Windows updates flashing. We need Windows updates. There's the Java pop-up. You need to update Java. The Flash pop-up. I mean, it's everything. And they go, and my customers always tell me, I don't want to touch any of that stuff because I don't know if it's legit or not. And fair enough. I said, I understand, because you really don't know. You know, and I try to tell them, if it looks like this, you're okay. Now, could that change down the road? Absolutely. You know, I haven't seen it change yet. Usually people are getting bit by the pop-ups that show up in the middle of the screen. The problem is when Windows 8 went from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1, Microsoft, this is one thing I disagree, and I love Microsoft products. This is one thing I disagreed with. They had this huge pop-up that says update to Windows 8.1.
Right.
And I'm like, well, why would you do that? Everything has been in the right-hand corner in a little tiny rectangle block that you know it's a legit thing. It's, you know, you're doing the same thing that the virus, you know, makers are doing. You got this big pop-up in the middle of the screen. Everybody's going, I don't know. Am I supposed to do that? Am I supposed to click on that? You know, because I've always taught my customers, don't click on those things.
Right.
You know, I say, hey, go to your start bar, shut the computer down, and restart your computer up and go back online. You should be fine. So, you know, but I always get the ones that go, yeah, I tried to close it out, and now it says I have 3,000 viruses.
Yeah, I truly think that with virus and malware, the problem with customers are out of sight, out of mind, and if they're not getting a a, you know, kind of an Avast pop-up or a Malwarebytes or some kind of pop-up, they kind of forget about, you know, that threat. It's kind of like backups.
Right.
You know, folks don't worry about backups till they crash the first time, and then they're religious about doing it all the time. So that's a tough thing. And we don't do a whole lot of residential. I've got a Yelp account and I've got a lot of positive comments on Yelp and I get a lot of calls, but you know, when folks call and they're like, well, you know, I've got a crash machine. The first thing I ask is, how old's the machine? 3.5 years old. I'm like, look, dude, I really would love to help you, but it's probably going to cost you, you know, $100 to $150, you know, and then that kind of turns them off right there. And, you know, I had my time in the trenches with a shop, working on residential work. Residential work is tough.
It is.
And it's a tough business, and you don't get a lot of return business, you know, unless it's the big millionaire guy out there that's got, you know, the huge AV system and, you know, you're working on his stuff. And I mean, I'm not saying I turn it all away. I mean, I just did 2 dry restorations last week. And, you know, select work, you know, some displays will fix. I've got a buddy here that owns a group of stores that he does all residential, and I push a lot of work to him. So, you know, and of course we do all the residential work for our clients, you know, for their stuff at their houses. But,
oh, sure. And that's usually the way it works.
Yeah. But that right there will bite the new guy more than anything, because people, they don't want to pay, you know, they don't understand that stuff's going to cost $100, $150, $200 to work on it. And it's tough to explain to them. So you really have to do your homework up front and explain to them what the, you know, what you have to do. I've fixed stuff and never hear from the people again, you know, sometimes, right. You know, and I've still got machines sitting over here that are there. So, you know, it's, you know how that goes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
People are kind of wormy sometimes. So,
well, you know, there, I'll say it, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but, here's a tip, guys. There's really no money in residential work.
Man, there's not. There, you know, I see so many guys on Craigslist. I see, you know, it's a great cash business. It's a great, you know, business to do stuff here and there. But man, there's just no money. And sometimes, I mean, I've actually done work. I'm kind of inquisitive when I talk to people, and I actually run across, you know, I'll be like, this sounds interesting. And I'll talk to the guy and then he'll say, yeah, you know, we got 20 machines in our office too. And then I'm on it. So, you know, you have to kind of be selective kind of about that type of thing too. So, and Yelp is kind of good and bad, because it brings out a lot of the bad business that I don't want. But then again, you know, once in a while I get some good commercial work out of it, you know, once in a great while. So,
well, that's what I was going to say, you know, so here's the thing, you know, you guys heard me say that there's no money in residential business. The thing is, residential business is a great place to learn,
to start,
you know, and, yep. You know, like Chris has been saying, that's a lot of times, listen, I don't care what anybody says. If you really look back at your job, you know, if you're working a full-time job or whatever, or anything you've ever done in life, it's usually because you knew somebody that was attached to that industry or that job or whatever. That's just how life works. So my thought process is, as I'm working with residential computer clients, and this has happened to me in the place where I had my business before, out over on the east side, is that I had people starting to come to me and go, hey, I got this business. Can you do my network? And hey, I'm doing something downtown. I need a network set up down there. Can you do that? Can you set that up for me? And unfortunately, at the time, I was moving back out to this area. So I couldn't do that, but that's usually how that stuff gets started.
Yeah.
You know,
very good point.
Or my wife's in the, you know, in the bread shop getting bread, and the, you know, the lady behind the counter goes, "Man, this computer is so slow." Well, you know, my husband works on computers, you know, and hands her a business card, or, you know, some of these, you know, smaller mom and pop shops will put business cards out on the table because they, because we're supporting them as a local business, they want to support us as a local business. Right. And, those things are kind of, you know, when you keep it in the area of local business, it makes it kind of nice. So,
yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, you have to be you have to be selective, but there again, the avenue for work is you know, comes in funny places sometimes.
Oh yeah, so. Absolutely. So I was gonna say, what are so we've talked about a lot of things here. What do you have any like business tips that you know that have worked for you in your business that you would tell the new guy or even the guy or gal that's been in business for a little while, but you know, maybe be doing some things that is not helping them in their business?
A couple things. I go in after a lot of big companies, and take over work. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I see is invoicing, descriptions. You know, when you invoice a customer, you have to be super descriptive. You have to, you know, we do a lot of documentation. I use Google Apps to where my guys send in a description of every job, what they do. And then that gets, you know, on my contract customers, it goes over to a Google document where we track, you know, how many hours contracts are. And I know there's software that does that, but I have not found one that is as personal as the way I do it. But, when you send out invoices, you know, I do discounting, you know, if I'm on a big job and, you know, I worked out a special rate, you know, I'll put on the invoice. I discounted X amount of dollars, you know, because a lot of customers, if you don't spell things out, you know, it's really, kind of a hard thing, and get to know the people that pay you, because a lot of guys in business, you know, they'll take a bill into the person that they're actually doing the work for, but that's not the person writing the checks.
Right.
The person writing the checks is the accounts payable clerk, and you need to know them. You need to have email access. Find out when your billing is coming through. You know, and you know, guys in this business get so cash strapped, and you have to know where your cash is coming from.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And I would say the biggest thing though is pay taxes. Keep your money, set it aside. Set aside that 20%, 30%, 40%. I know so many guys in this business, and at one point I was, you know. I mean, I had billables, $80,000 a month, $90,000 a month. And, you know, at that time, you know, I'd go 90 days before doing billing and, you know, I wasn't the best, you know, find you a good accountant, set your money aside. That's a huge issue for new guys. 'Cause they're just out kind of blowing and going, you know, and spending the money. And if you're doing that, man, I mean, I've at one point I had 12 employees and, you know, there's a lot of responsibility with payroll taxes and you have to be organized with, we use QuickBooks Online. You know, we keep our stuff organized. I mean, I do billing a couple different ways. I do billing differently myself personally than my guys because I track stuff a little bit differently. And, but if you've got guys working for you, you know, a lot of guys have another guy that's doing work for them. It's all the work descriptions. It's the exact time. It's the time that they were there, the time that they left,
right?
You know, and all that type stuff that has to be on the invoices to get paid. And that's a very important aspect of the business that a lot of guys overlook. So
yeah, no, I agree with that. And you're going to get that more from, I think, the business side. What I've learned from residential customers in this area anyways, is they could care less.
Did I
fix their computer? Does it work?
Yep.
Can I get online? Yep. That's all they care about. So, but yep. I do agree with you, you know, even on a residential side, when I do offer a discount, I make sure that I put the price on there, because I put the regular price and then give them a discount on, you know, on that price, because if they're talking to their friends, hey, he did it for this. And then their friends come in expecting that price. That's not the price that I do it for. So, you know, one of the things I use, and I didn't keep a whole lot of records, man. People would come back to me and go, hey, you remember when you worked on this machine? And to be honest with you, it could have been 4 months ago. And I barely remember the person. And it's like, I'm not trying to be mean, but it's just like, yeah, I worked on your machine and I can't remember what I did on it. So I use Repair Shopper now, and I love it because...
Yeah, I've seen that. I do like that.
I've been able to, because every time I do something, I can put it in there. I do a little notation. It takes me seconds.
Yeah.
And when I hit submit, it adds it to my log. Now, I do not put this on my invoice for residential, you know, customers, because it, quite honestly, sometimes it would make it, you know, two or three pages. And it's just, I try to keep everything to one page if I can.
Right.
But the reason I do that is it also emails them. And it gives them a link. They can go in and they can check the status of their computer. They can pay me through PayPal if they desire. And they can use... you know, they can see what's going on with their computer, and I'm basically keeping them updated without having to send them a phone call and say, hey, here's what's going on with your computer. Now, not to say that I don't still contact people when there's a big decision to be made. Hey, this is going to be $250. Do you want to do it? You know, I give them a call then and let them know.
Right.
Even if I've sent a, you know, even if I put that down in my description and send it out to them, I still make a phone call when it gets to that point. But, you know, when I do the diagnostic on the machine and I find out what the problem is, and we already kind of know what the problem is, I'm not necessarily going to call them for that, but they'll get an update. So,
right.
But yeah, you know, I think about that when you're on site and stuff like that for businesses too, you know, keeping that time log, because when you're charging an hourly rate, you've got to be able to justify that somehow. So that stuff definitely needs to be on there. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. And one last thing, guys, you know, I kind of mentor some new guys in the business, and a lot of times I say, well, how much did you make yesterday? They're like, I don't know. I'd be like, how much you make last week? I don't know. And I'm like, dude, when I got into this business in, you know, 95, 94, 95, I mean, I kept a steno page on exactly how much I made on every job and how much I made every day and how much I made every week. And if you don't know how much money you're making, you're not going to make it in this business. You're not going to, you know, and then add in your 30% taxes, you know, all your overhead dry, you know, your gasoline. You know, guys think that, oh my God, I'm going to make, you know, $70-$80 an hour, but it's not $70 or $80 an hour. No. You know, and that's where guys just kill themselves. And you know, it's tough. So,
yeah, there's a lot to that, you know, and it's hard to figure some of that stuff out, but yeah, that's a good idea to have a mentor that can help you in this business. And the other thing I would say, as far as, you know, divvying up your money and knowing where it's going and what you're doing with it, I would encourage everybody to read a book by Mike Michalowicz called Profit First. It's the book's not that expensive. You can get it on Audible if you don't have time to read like myself. Or you can, you know, you can buy the book on you know, podnest.com/Amazon. And when you do that, read that book, you know, really in this business, I think another thing that people don't do, if you're going to be the boss and you're going to be your own, you know, your own boss and you're in running your own business, really need to, you know, probably read a 1 to 2 business books a month. Because it'll let you know some of the things that maybe you're not doing so well, and it'll let you know some of the things you might be doing well and some of the areas that you can make an adjustment. And a lot of times we're just running around, like you said, I'm guilty of it. I run around and do a bunch of work, and how much money did I make? I have no clue. You know, yeah. Do I put the stuff in my, you know, my Excel spreadsheet or whatever? Sure. I do all that stuff, but I don't really know what's going on with it, because I don't have a plan, you know, from day to day, week to week, month to month, you know, to make X amount of dollars and make sure that I'm, you know, putting the right amount of money away for each different thing, whether, like you said, it's taxes or whatever. So, but he puts a good, easy to understand plan together. Again, it's not rocket science. It's nothing new, but it's just a different way of thinking about it. And you definitely need the taxes. I know is a big one for people. You really have to put away your taxes. And, you know, like you said, get a good accountant that can take care of you so you can get the proper type of deductions and not get, you know, taken advantage of. Because the other thing that I see in his business, which is sad, I see a lot of people paying a lot in taxes. And
that
really
they
not,
shouldn't be.
Exactly. And they're not making a whole lot of money. And I'm like going, yeah. I don't think I'd do that for that amount of money if I'm going to give most of it to the government. What's the point?
Right. For example, just receipts, daily receipts. You need to keep all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, luncheons and that type thing. And one other thing I want to say about that is listen to your clients. I mean, I've got clients that I've got a really good friend of mine that's a friend now because he's been a client for 20 years, but very wealthy. But I listen to everything he says. I watch every move he makes when I'm in his office, you know, because I learn. And right. Another client of mine, and he's worth over $1 billion, believe it or not. And I listen to every word that this man says. And you know, a lot of people, you have to listen to your clients, and they're rich for a reason,
right?
You know, they're if they're in the labor business, if they're selling ceiling tiles or, you know, whatever, you know, they're rich for a reason. And that's where you have to, I'm a really good listener, and I'm somebody that, I guess I should have been a private investigator or something like that, because I see everything that happens everywhere. I mean, you know, my kids don't go anywhere without, I mean, I'm not a micromanager on them, but you have to see everything that's going on around you in this business. So
absolutely.
Everything,
yep.
You know, you have to listen when you walk through the office of a client, you know, you have to listen to, I can't get to a certain website, or my machine is really slow, or something like that. And you have to listen to people. So.
Absolutely. No, I agree. Excellent advice, Chris. I mean, you brought a lot to the table today, and there's been a ton of information, and I just want to thank you for taking your time and coming out on the show and sharing with us today, because it's, like I said, just a ton of information, and I know everybody's going to learn, you know, some things from this, and hopefully we can all be better for it.
Yeah, and I really appreciate being on the show, and I've listened to you for a long time, and listened to all the shows on this, on Podnuts, and there is so much for guys to learn. I mean, I still learn stuff on it, and I've probably got more years than a lot of guys.
But, right, absolutely.
But I really like what you're doing, and really think guys should, you know, even if it's something that you think you know about, listen, you know, because you're probably going to pick up something else, you know,
right.
And it's very good. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, Chris, you're more than welcome to, whenever you want, we can come on a show again and talk about some other things. And, yeah, I'd love to have you back on. And, like I said, a lot of good information and a lot of stuff, I'm sure can be shared.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you guys, where can people find you at, by the way?
Our company is, Computer and Communications Innovations, and our web address is NashvilleComputer.us, and there is actually a Nashville Computer in Nashville, but our domain name has been NashvilleComputer.us for a long time, but it's Computer and Communications Innovations, and our phone number is 615-986-8082, and we serve pretty much all of Middle Tennessee, and we've actually got national clients, you know, that we also do work for, so here in the Middle Tennessee area. So
very cool. And obviously you're doing migrations and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I like the website, and I do like the name Computer and Communications Innovations.
Yeah. Yeah, because we do pretty much everything. We do. It's when you've been in this business as long as I have, you have to be able to pretty much do everything because people will ask. So
that's a good point. Yep. Yeah, that's very good. All right. Well, I appreciate it again. And you guys, you can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, just like Chris was, please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. We're always looking for technicians to come out and share what they do in the business. And if you guys want to leave a voicemail, you can call 1-888-697-0162. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network the next time you're shopping at Amazon. Go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. Puts a little change in the pockets of the Podnuts Network to bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.